WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
British actor Bob Hoskins, who played a human detective in a world of cartoon characters in the acclaimed movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit, died this week after contracting pneumonia. He was 71 years old. Hoskins, born in London and raised as part of the working class, specialized in playing tough guys with soft underbellies, almost always with his natural Cockney accent. On British TV, his breakthrough role was as the star of 1978's Pennies from Heaven, Dennis Potter's brilliant musical miniseries. On film, Hoskins first broke out in 1980's The Long Good Friday, playing an East End gangster. His later movies included Mona Lisa, The Cotton Club, and Mermaids. Terry Gross spoke to Bob Hoskins in 1988, the year he starred in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and asked him why he gravitated to such hard-boiled, tough-guy roles.
You know, many of your roles have been underworld characters. In Roger Rabbit, you're a hard-boiled detective. In The Cotton Club and Mona Lisa and The Long Good Friday, you play people in the underworld. Do you gravitate to those kinds of roles?
No, I think they gravitate towards me.
And why do you think they do?
I don't know. Maybe I. People take me for an underground sort of. I'm pouring some water out, by the way.
Okay.
No, sir. I don't know. I think if you've got a face like mine, you don't usually wind up with the parts that Errol Flynn played. You know.
I want to talk to you briefly about The Long Good Friday.
Mm.
And well, I want to play a scene here. Your character is trying to put together a deal with organized crime concerns from America.
Mm-hmm.
While an American is visiting your character in London, some of his English business associates are murdered. And your character gets the idea that they're being murdered because somebody's trying to mess up the deal that you're putting together with the Americans. And here's a scene where you discover a bomb was left in your casino.
I wonder how it got disconnected.
Well, the wire must have come loose when Lil opened it.
Stroke of luck, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Last night, were there any peculiarities?
Usual crowd. Regular punters, nothing really.
Well, no strangers.
A few Arabs. It's a good night. Nothing unusual.
Nothing unusual, he says. Eric's been blown to smithereens, Colin's been carved up, and I've got a bomb in me casino, and you say nothing unusual?
Did you, try to hang out with any gangsters, mobsters, before doing this role?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, well, it must have been crazy, really. I went down to these clubs and met a load of gangsters and said, teach me to be a gangster.
What kind of clubs?
Well, sort of gangsters' clubs, where all the gangsters hang out.
Well, what do you do? Go and say, hi, I'm an actor, I'll be playing a guy kind of like you. So,
I went in
how
and
you
said,
behave.
I'm playing a gangster in a film.
Mm-hmm.
Can you teach me to do it? And they thought it was very amusing.
I guess it's kind of flattering to their ego. In a
yeah,
way.
Oh yeah. Well, there were a lot of real villains, actually, in the film. Like, there was one scene in it where apart from the crew and me and Derek Thompson, there wasn't one person in that room that wasn't under suspicion of committing a murder. There was a very heavy mob. It was quite funny, actually, because at one time I was doing a scene and I was shouting and screaming and doing a thing, and one of these guys came up and said, hey, you don't have to do that. I said, what do you mean? He said, you don't have to shout. They know who you are. And I'm like, right, fine, yeah, okay. So I was very quiet after that.
That's great.
And the scene worked. Yeah.
Did you get any cards or phone calls from any of the people who you apprenticed after they saw the movie?
No. Well, one guy who was quite a famous villain in London escaped from prison just after I'd made the film. And I was in a pub and someone came in and said, someone wants to see you. I thought, oh, God, what's this? He said, no, it's okay. And this guy was on the run And we were hunted by Interpol and all kinds of people. And I walked into the pub, and there he was, standing there. He said, listen, Bob, I've seen the tape of the film, and I just want to say we're glad to see one of our own doing well. I thought, I've never hurt anybody in my life. What are you talking about? I've certainly never killed anybody.
Can we talk a little bit about your background? I'm real curious about what kind of neighborhood you grew up in.
Working class. Mm-hmm. Sort of a normal working class area. There was, you know, a mixture of hard-working people, layabouts, villains, gamblers. Like a normal area, you know. It was a mixture of everything.
Which side were you gravitating to when you were a teenager?
Survival, I think. Like, you know, just to earn a living. I was never a great great one for... I was never very clever, like, by... Sort of what I mean is, I don't mean I'm stupid. What I mean is, like street talk and the street kind of survival, where some people really thrive on the street. You know, some people become very rich on the street. I never did. I was sort of pretty ordinary, really. It was only when I was pretending to be on the street that I started to get rich.
But I guess having observed a lot of people who did well on the street helped you play characters like that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a big help in the background. And I suppose actually within an ordinary area, if you was brought up in Brooklyn or the Bronx or sort of, mm-hmm. you know, these kind of areas, there are people there that are very respectable, very honest, ordinary people. But they're surrounded by sort of drug dealers or, you know,
right.
all the other stuff. So they can't be off sort of living with it. You know, so my experience of the crime world was an everyday occurrence.
I don't know if this is a true story or not, but the story that goes around, which I suppose is true, is that you got your first role by accident.
Mm, yeah.
Right? Would you tell the story?
Well, yeah. God, it sounds terrible now. I was in a bar in an amateur theatre, and there was a lot of people there sort of reading these, well, at the time, were scripts. I didn't know what a script was. And this guy came down and said, right, you're next. And I, oh, am I? And I'd had enough drink to sort of think, oh, okay, I feel a bit adventurous. Went upstairs and they said, have you seen the script? I said, no, what does it look like? And they gave me the script, said, do you want to read it? And I read it and they said, well, do you want to read it out loud so we can hear it? So I read it out loud and I got the part. I was playing the lead in this play. And the first night, an agent came to see it and said, you should take this up professionally. I said, well, get us a job and I will. And she did. And I've been a professional actor ever since.
So who did you learn from? Did you learn from a lot of the actors and directors that you worked with when you started performing on stage?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mainly learned from women.
Why is that?
Well, I realised very early on that, like, drama is about very private moments. Like, most of the time, people walking around hide behind a sort of shield of style or whatever. But drama is about showing those very private moments, those painful moments, those ridiculous moments that make up the human life. And because women have had to keep their mouths shut for sort of thousands of years, they developed this technique of making those private moments felt very clearly. You know, guys who've plenty of been talking for these thousands of years and saying exactly what they feel don't express themselves very well. They hide behind this shield of masculinity. And those private moments are very difficult to get at through men. You know? Do you know what I mean?
It's got
nothing
to
do with male and male and female. It's very, it's particularly how you express yourself.
Now, do you think the women who you learned this from were aware of that, or did you just learn it from observing them?
I learned it from observing them, sort of women in general, and mainly, and actresses.
Uh-huh.
You know, watching the way that an actress would put forward an idea or a feeling. Just watching, like, you can walk in a room, and if there's been a row between two women, you know. You know what I mean? Or if a woman sort of wants you to know something without telling you, you know. And that's the job of an actor, to make an audience know.
Was your Cockney accent ever a problem in roles you had to play?
Not really, no.
Did you have to learn different accents when you started acting? Did you already know how to do that?
Yeah, well, I suppose if a guy... I've always told jokes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to tell jokes, there's always racial jokes. And I used to tell all kinds of racial jokes, you know.
So, yeah.
All kinds of different accents.
So you have to do accents to tell the jokes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, while we're talking about actors and actresses who you learn from, I know you performed, I think, pretty early in your career in a play with John Gielgud.
Yeah.
Did you learn anything from him?
Yes, I did. He was extraordinary, Gielgud. I had only been in the business, 2-3 years. And suddenly I was on stage in a 40-minute scene with John Gielgud, and I had all the lines. I couldn't believe it. And he was wonderful. He was really wonderful to work with. And I'll never forget, I had a line in the scene. What was it? I can't remember what the line was now, but it was a funny line. It was a gag line.
Uh-huh.
And... But I it wasn't getting as much as I thought it should get, you know?
As much laughter?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I said to him, you know, what am I... I said, I'm not getting enough out of this. He said, well, what you should do, he said, is when you come to the line, step back 2 paces, count 2, and then say it. I said, what? You've got to be kidding. No, it'll be fine, I promise you. And so he came to it. I'd forgotten about this. And he was sitting up on this big box all the way through the scene. And I came to the line, and he shouted out down to me, step back 2 paces and count 2. So, oh, you've killed it. Thanks a lot. So I did. I stepped back 2 paces, counted 2. And the audience went crazy. I got around. And I looked up at him, and he's not very good at winking. And there he is, trying to wink at me. You know, I told you so. Well, after that, I did it again the night afterwards. And I got another round. I thought, he must be doing something up there. What's he doing? This can't be me. So the night after, I did it again. And quick, as soon as I said it, I whipped round and looked at him again. And he was still sitting there trying to wink at me. You know, he wasn't doing a thing. And every night after that, I stepped back 2 paces, counted 2, and got around. And I could never figure this out. And ever since, every single show I've ever done, there's always a point where I'll step back 2 paces, count 2, and I've never got a thing, not a titter. It's never worked since.
So that's not something that has changed your career forever from
no,
this
no,
little
no,
lesson.
It's driving me nuts.
Thanks so much for talking with us. I've really enjoyed hearing from you immensely. Thank you very much.
Actor Bob Hoskins speaking to Terry Gross in 1988. He died earlier this week at age 71.